This podcast is intended for investment professionals only.
Hello and welcome to the final episode of Market Talk for the month of March. And crumbs, what a month it's been. While central bankers walk the tightrope between financial stability and stubborn inflation, we'll be asking, has the US Federal Reserve done enough to nip any financial contagion in the bud? Why the relative resilience in equities during this period of volatility compared with weakening credit? And while interest rates continue to rise in the West, why are they falling in the East? Well, keeping his finger firmly on the pulse of these fast-moving markets is Ben Bennett, who joins us from Hong Kong.
Let's focus on the Fed. So as you say, on this week, Jay Powell had a really tough decision because he's trying to slow the economy. He's trying to slow inflation. That's his job. And he's doing that by tightening financial conditions using rate hikes. But then since the last meeting, we've had all sorts of stress in the financial system. So now the Federal Reserve Board of Governors have got to try and decide how much credit tightening, financial tightening that has already done, and then adjust how much they have to hike interest rates for in order to compensate. But this is an extremely blunt tool, hiking interest rates. It's like, you know, in medieval times when every disease was cured using a leech. It's a bit like this with the Federal Reserve. The only thing that they've got is interest rates. So they try and calibrate stress in the banking system in terms of how many rate hikes that's worth, and then adjust appropriately. They hiked by 25 basis points. I think without what was going on in the banking system, they probably would have hiked by 50 basis points. But frankly, that is a guess between the two. And, you know, I would say there's bigger downside risk that there's more tightening around what we've seen in the banking system than the 25 basis points in effect that he decided to not hike by. I think they're going to have to calibrate going forward. They've got their eyes on lending condition surveys, etc., and they've got their eyes on deposit flows, and they'll calibrate going forward. But again, they only meet every 6 weeks. They could do a cut or a hike in between meetings, but this is a really, really tough situation for the Fed. I think there's downside risk, as I said.
And I was going to say, it's the tightening that we've seen in the corporate sector, and you know, going back to the S with SVB Bank and other regional banks, is that going to filter through to the household sector at all? I'm not sure how it works, to be honest.
Well, it's bank lending conditions is sort of what we're talking about here. So if you're if you're talking about SVB, which was, of course, focused on technology companies in the US, if you're a technology company in the US, suddenly you're without a bank that you used to be able to call up and ask for a loan. So straight away, that tightens those conditions. And maybe some other bank will step in, but perhaps at a higher interest rate or maybe slightly tighter conditions to that. But then that other bank has got less ability to focus on other lending. So there's a ripple effect in terms of everyone gets affected by this. And of course, at the same time, I think banks quite rightly are looking at how solid their deposit base is, because part of the problem with these banks is on the asset side, so the lending that they've done, but also worried about deposit withdrawals. We know what happens in a banking crisis, don't we? So they're also looking at their deposits and maybe being a little bit just fundamentally less risk loving in terms of their lending, because they just want to just make sure they've got enough liquidity. So I think it affects everything. Yes.
Yeah. And meanwhile, back in the good old UK, and I don't get this at all, and I know you'll explain it for me. So yesterday from the BOE, we have a 25 basis point hike. We've got stubbornly high inflation at over 10%. And yet the good old UK British public keep on spending. I mean, retail sales figures booming and confidence for March are booming too. So has everyone but me got a pay rise then, Ben?
No, that's not the case, unfortunately. I mean, the retail sales, as you say, have been strong. Partly, I think, because of the weather. I mean, I'm in Hong Kong, but I was in the UK last week at the races, and it was quite nice on Friday. It was T-shirt weather, actually. But the whole of winter has been quite a good period, hasn't it? So I think people have been spending because the weather has been a bit better, you know, getting outside, maybe spending more on restaurants, etc. So retail sales have been strong. But what you said about inflation is crucial, not just for the UK, for the US as well, back to the Federal Reserve. I think if there was a credit crunch like we've just seen over the last week, normally central banks would be minded to cut interest rates, this they want to try and offset some of that tightening, but they can't because they've got very high inflation. The UK CPI inflation surprised to the upside just in the last few days. As you, it's above 10%. You can't be cutting interest rates because the central banks have got to try and get that under control. So you add all that up and we've got higher interest rates. Yes, we've got okay retail sales, but I suspect what is happening now in terms of credit crunch, in terms of that credit tightening that we've spoken about, will lead to downside growth risk going forward. And that's what central banks are focusing on as well.
Yeah. And I want to talk about that in a minute, about implications for investors, because I know you'll talk about that in a minute. But meanwhile, just quickly, whilst we are hiking in the West, rates are falling in the East. What's going on behind the recent China reserve requirement ratio cut then?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, this isn't technically a rate cut. It's just that the banks have got to put less money at the central bank. So they've been allowed to then take money out and lend it to other people. So in effect, it's sort of a rate cut because, as we said before, it's the ability to then lend more money out to people, loosen credit conditions. So at the margin, it looks like it's positive. I think there's some nuances around it. The Central Bank of China has been tightening credit conditions a little bit since Chinese New Year. So this just offsets that to some degree. And also credit demand in China has been higher than expected. Remember, we're reopening in China and companies are borrowing a little bit more. So you need to, I guess, give a little bit of liquidity in order to allow that to happen. So I think what it's doing is facilitating the reopening rather than accelerating it. The central bank was quite happy, I suspect, to see that the property sector hasn't gone on an accelerating path over the last few weeks. It's still under control. And on that basis, they're happy just to keep liquidity flowing. If they were to see the property sector really accelerate, they might tap the brakes again. So like I said, it's just steady as she goes rather than accelerating.
Okay, fine. So let's go back to that question then about investor implications for everything we've experienced for the last two and a bit weeks. I think you've had a strategy meeting recently. Your positioning is you're still underweight risk in equities and credit.
Just to give you some numbers, so I'm taking these sort of from the weakest or the strongest point in March. So we're recording on Friday, the 24th of March. So up until the Thursday, the 23rd close. So 2-year Treasury yields since their highs earlier in March are about 120 basis points lower in yield. So they're down to about 3.8%. So they've fallen from about 5 down to 3.8, massive fall. And that's because Fed rate hikes have been priced out. People are worried. People are putting their money in treasuries. Now, over that period, we have seen credit widening, credit spreads, the excess spread over government bond yields widening. So US investment grade from the tights again earlier in March, they're nearly 30 basis points higher in terms of the spread. The high yield market, the riskier part, nearly 120 basis points higher. Great. So credit has definitely been impacted.
Yeah.
The S&P is off about 2.5% from the highs. The NASDAQ, which is obviously the US technology index, is basically at the highs. It hasn't corrected at all up until Thursday's close. So equities, I don't think, is reflecting what is being reflected in certainly rates market, which I think is saying, look, there's higher chance of a recession here. We're not going to hike interest rates. We may even need to cut interest rates by the end of this year because we're in a recession. I think credit has partly reflected it. So, that's looking like it's a fairer reflection of risk. Part of that, though, is because there's more financials in credit. Credit Suisse, for example, had a lot of bonds that were impacted within credit markets. So that on that basis, there is more focus on credit. Equities, financials have a smaller weighting generally. But still, even so, I'd say credit is a fairer reflection than, say, equity markets.
Okay, and obviously you mentioned the Nasdaq there. I mean, that is just a very specific index, isn't it? As you say, with no banking stocks, and presumably that's anticipating peak rates. Then is it? That's reason for its resilience.
I mean, it's easy to say that, you know, credit investors and bond investors, which is my background, we're always bearish because we look at the worst case, and equity investors are always positive and because they're always looking at growth. But in this sense, I've got a feeling that is actually the case. You know, lower yields for me represents a higher chance of a recession based on a financial issue, a credit crunch, whatever, however you want to describe it. But perhaps equity investors are, as you say, and going, well, that's it. The Fed might not need to hike anymore, and therefore that's a positive. I just don't think that they're putting two and two together and saying that they're not hiking because we're in a recession, or at least that's the risk later in this year. So absolutely, there's definitely a glass half full element there with the Nasdaq.
So just quickly on, I mean, I feel, and I don't know whether I'm right to feel it, but I feel this has sort of been a US and European problem, and emerging markets have sort of, well, they've gone on the back pages, haven't they, whilst the others have hold the headlines. But well, what's happening in emerging market credit there then, Ben? Because they've experienced some falls, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, emerging market credit is wider in, I'd say, in sympathy with what we've seen in investment grade and high yield credit in the US. I mean, there's a lot of similar investors. So, you know, if high yield credit spreads widen out in the US, then it makes emerging market credit look relatively expensive. So those spreads would probably widen out as well. So that's what's happened. So emerging market credit has been weaker. But what I would say in defense of emerging markets, and I guess, you know, thinking about in the region in Asia, for example, is the dollar over this period has been weaker. So the US, we're talking about fewer rate hikes in the US. And if you have fewer rate hikes, you probably don't want to own as many dollars because you're not going to get the same sort of yield that you would have before. So the dollar has fallen. So again, from the peaks a few weeks ago, the March peaks, the dollar index, the DXY index, is down about 3%. That generally is good for emerging markets because they generally borrow dollars, or it makes inflation less problematic for them. They're not importing as much inflation. So on that basis, central banks in emerging markets probably have a little bit of room to support their economies if they need it. So that's a medium term positive for emerging markets, but they have been caught up a little bit in the general risk off tone.
Okay, so now next week, don't think we've got much data actually. I couldn't find much that's around, but obviously we're not out of the woods, are we? So I'm hoping for a quiet week, and expect you are too, but I'm not sure we're going to get one in terms of these banks and what's going on.
No, exactly. So the only really interesting bit of data that we got next week is European flash inflation. Inflation is super important. So we've got the European flash numbers next week, see what they are, see if the ECB's hands are tied. But apart from that, I think you're right. We just have to see how this wobble in the financial system goes through. I mean, I was working at Lehman Brothers in 2008, so I've got it firsthand.
That's a bit of a
knowledge.
Boast, isn't it?
Well, yes. Yeah, so I don't know if it's a boast. It certainly isn't a boast. But at least you see how these crises go. And generally, when you've got an issue like this, you need to see someone with unlimited money, and that's basically governments or central banks, step up and provide unconditional support. It's usually not good enough to go in and force losses onto bondholders, equity holders, even depositors, or threaten losses on deposit holders. If you do that, people start to worry, people start to go and find somewhere safe to hide, and that just exacerbates the problem. So, you know, I've got my credit bond background, so I'm always a little bit glass half empty generally, but I would worry that there's more interesting headlines to come in the next couple of weeks or couple of months.
Do you think to that point, do you think central bankers have done enough? I mean, Yellen was saying something about, I think she was a bit guarded, wasn't she, in terms of providing unconditional liquidity?
Exactly. Look, I mean, the issue is that central banks and governments are loathed to go down the sort of moral hazard route and provide bailouts. But at some point, that bailout, that moral hazard, becomes a better option than the alternative. my bias is that they probably haven't done enough yet. And look, they're hiking interest rates. I mean, they're still hiking interest rates, maybe not as much as before, but they're still hiking interest rates. So that doesn't tell me that everything's sorted out. So, like I said, I suspect we're going to see a few more headlines before this is all done.
Okay. Oh, come on then, Ben. Cheer us up with your number of the week. What is it and why?
Yeah, I'm actually going to cheer you up because, and I've spoken about this a little bit before. So the number of the week is +2%. It's not very big, but it's +2%. And I've talked about high yield and high yield spreads and performance. It's been a pretty tough couple of weeks for high yield bonds. But +2% is the return, the positive return that they've made so far this year. And you're asking me, like, how on earth is that possible? Well, it's because they started the year at such high yields. They started the year at sort of 9%. So you can weather a pretty harsh battering with those starting yields in all, and you can still make reasonable positive returns because you've got such carry. It was much harder at the start of last year when high yields were much, much lower, sort of 4-5% in order to make positive returns. So that's all I would say. And I spoke about, you know, central banks and governments stepping in with unconditional support. That's important. But also when things get so cheap that it attracts in fresh new capital that's otherwise sitting there doing nothing, that's another way that we can resolve this crisis. So, you know, don't forget about valuations here. That's really important.
Exactly. And once again, Ben, you have put it all into context for us. So I am feeling more cheerful. So thank you. Thanks for your time today. Thanks for your insights. And thanks to all our listeners for listening. Thank you.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are by their nature subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal and General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website. Copyright 2022. Legal and General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal and General Investment Management Asia Limited, the licensed corporation BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission. For professional investors only.